on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn. Sooner or later, gotta
cut you down. Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio, 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. And in Waukesha on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. You're going right to the front lines of history in the making, and there was a lot of it made. And I'm going to start with those hearings. I should say that the first of several broadcasts of the hearing of the January 6th Commission that was aired last night, aired for 2 hours, 8 to 10 Eastern Time, 7 to 9 Central Time. I watched every minute of it. The next one's Tuesday. There will be a number of them. Watch them if you can. Watch them if you can. I'll tell you, Benny Thompson, the chairman, was magnificent. Liz Cheney, the vice chair, was magnificent. It was the most compelling piece of television on this subject I have ever seen. And one of the good things is every major station except Fox broadcast it live without interruption. ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS, CNN, and MSNBC with little or no interruption. Only Fox did not. And what they did is they had their hosts comment saying it was dull, it was boring, but by the way, we're not going to let you see it. Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham, you remember, were the ones who had texted Mark Meadows during the insurrection saying that Trump had to stop it. This was terrible. This was going to destroy all of his accomplishments, such as they thought they were, his legacy. People were going to get hurt. Stop it, stop it, stop it. This is Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham. Well, he sung a different tune last night. He's reported as saying, it's dull, it's boring. Wait a minute, are you the Sean Hannity who was so alarmed that you texted the chief of staff, Mark Meadows, in the middle of it, saying that this was terrible, it was going to destroy things, people were going to get hurt, he had to call it off, and he had to spend the next 4 years just attacking irregularities in elections? Or is that a different guy? No, it's not a different guy. It's the same guy. And in the law, when you look at evidence, simultaneous recollections to the event, the closer the recollections are to the event, the more trustworthy they are. It was frankly disgusting to have a network that calls itself Fox News do that. But let me get into the hearing. This is, if you did not see it, and even if you did, I want to go over a few things. First of all, some of the people, and I'm talking about Bill Barr and Ivanka Trump in particular, who for months, now for a year, have come under justifiable criticism for everything they did to enable Trump, they at the end saved themselves. They had no desire to plead the fifth. They had no desire to blow off the subpoena like somebody like Steve Bannon or Peter Navarro. And Bill Barr, Crooked William Barr, Attorney General, the guy that lied about the Comey investigation, the guy that enabled Trump along the way and his impeachments and everything else, finally at the end threw Trump under the bus. And there was video that I had never seen before, and no one apparently had ever seen until the January 6th committee got it in the form of depositions and just releasing it. And he said the election was not rigged. It was crazy to say it was. I told Trump that he can't continue with this, and he resigned on December 23rd, 2 days before Christmas and 2 weeks before the insurrection. That was Bill Barr. Ivanka Trump, you know, this is her father, so they asked her what she thought about it, and she said, well, I saw what Bill Barr had to say, and I trust Bill Barr. obviously to the extent that there was not fraud in the election. The most compelling witness, and I'll tell you, it was breathtaking, was a police officer named Carolyn Edwards. Now, Carolyn Edwards is a Capitol Police officer, graduate of the University of Georgia, career police officer, Capitol, she guarded the Capitol. She said she had been involved in restraining 100 or so demonstrations, highly trained. She said, I couldn't believe it. This mob came up and they asked about numbers. She said, well, I mean, there were hundreds and there were five of us, five against hundreds at the first perimeter around a bike rack. And they charged her. She said that she's called names. She was called Pelosi's dog. She was called, they started to shout taunts at the police officers, like, how much do you make? I bet you got your paycheck all through the pandemic. Well, they were working all through the pandemic to guard the Capitol, And when she stood tall, and she said, it was very, very poignant. She said, my uncle, actually, it was her grandfather. She comes from a family, I think, of veterans, but it was her grandfather during the Korean War who fought at the Battle of the Chosin Reservoir, one of the toughest battles in the Korean War. My Uncle Jerry Monahan, 21 years old, also fought in combat and career as a Marine and was wounded, but her grandfather got wounded too. She said, I'm proud of my grandpa, and I hope he's proud of me because I stood up. Well, here's what happened to her. She gets hit over the head with a bike rack, for Pete's sake. She said they were holding onto the bike rack. That was what, their barrier to this mob? And she gets hit over the head. She falls back, hits her head on the concrete, becomes unconscious. An officer revives her, and she gets up to go to another perimeter to guard this mob, a handful of cops against the mob. And she is pepper sprayed in the face. And she said, we're trained to do what to do with that. Pepper spray is very serious. So it temporarily blinds you and you turn red and you have to be decontaminated. Another officer following protocol took her to be decontaminated. And as she was being decontaminated, somebody in the crowd tear gassed her. She's recovering from her injuries. But, you know, you hit your head on the concrete. And, you know, you go down like that. First of all, you get hit over the head with a bike rack. A bike rack. Next time you fasten your bike to a bike rack, think somebody picks it up, a bunch of guys hit you over the head with it. That could have killed her. And then she falls and hits her head. You can get a concussion, and it may not show up right away. And it may impact your longevity, frankly. She was restrained. She was deliberate. And she was magnificent. She was magnificent. Then there was a videographer, a guy making a documentary. He was not part of the insurrection. He was a British guy making a documentary about Trump. So he goes around to all these rallies showing everything that goes on. He figures this is just another rally. Suddenly, he's separated from everybody in his group. They said to him, on the Proud Boys, for instance, how many of them were there? Because he had been embedded with them. He had interviewed them. He said there were a couple of hundred. And in his deposition, he'd said about 250. And these were people on the Oath Keepers, many of them with military training, who did a formation that they described as a stack. If you look at the videos, it looks like just a mob milling around. I remember during student riots during the Vietnam War, yeah, there are a bunch of kids out there shouting and milling around. But people with military training go single file through a crowd. They call it a stack. And you can just see it. And these guys, you know, there's this mob milling around. And suddenly you see a lot of guys sort of single file holding on to each other, piercing through the crowd that way to get to their destination. It also came out that a lot of these Proud Boys, the ones that led this thing, had left the Trump rally early to go to the Capitol and scout out defenses. So, yes, Trump and Giuliani and Mo Brooks and Don Trump Jr. and the rest of them lathered up the crowd, but this had been planned in advance. The people that were out there scouting had planned in advance. And then when the mob showed up, everybody was shouting, everybody in the police, where are the Metropolitan Police? Where are the DC police? They finally came. But it turned out that Donald Trump would not call the National Guard or the Army. So Pence did. General Milley. And then he got a call back from Mark Meadows trying to countermand it, saying only the president can give that order. And the president was in the White House chuckling. The crowd was yelling, hang Mike Pence, hang Mike Pence. And, you know, Trump chuckled and he said, well, maybe he deserves it. This is what, his own vice president deserves to be murdered? And their people want Trump to be president again in 2024? 2024, his own vice president. It was a very important, magnificent presentation, far more riveting to me than Watergate or the historically where I've seen the McCarthy hearings. You've got to watch this. The next one is Tuesday. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-789. A lot more back after the break.
We gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Director. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. I want to talk a little more about the broadcast last night of the January 6th Commission's hearing on the insurrection on January 6th. One thing occurred to me, I don't know if it occurred to you, besides the fact that the testimony from Carolyn Edwards, the police officer, about how badly she was beaten and injured and pepper sprayed and tear gassed by the mob, I think this is going to have an effect that isn't immediately apparent, and that is this. It's going to be the effect on Merrick Garland. You know, up until now, there's been so much evidence of what Trump did. There are felonies all over the place. It's, even the Pink Panther, Inspector Clouseau, you know, if he sees enough dead bodies, he got to think there's something going on here. Even the Pink Panther. And Garland is the ultimate Pink Panther. He's sitting there going, oh, okay, well, we need what, more evidence? Well, not only is this a lot of evidence, but it is so compelling. And every major network in the country, except Fox News, broadcast it live. This is a lot of pressure on him to do something. And you know who it's also a lot of pressure on? Apparently, I think there are 9 people on that commission. Only 2 of them spoke, Benny Thompson and Liz Cheney. But all the rest of them, there is some word that some of them are reluctant to refer Trump for prosecution on the theory that maybe this is going to look like a banana republic move to just throw the last guy in jail. Once you've seen this, once you have seen the video of that videographer, of that the documentary he was making, I've never seen that video before, and the violence, the viciousness, the hatred, the obscenities and everything, you will know that Trump committed a felony by doing this seditious conspiracy. And some of them have been charged already, the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys. And if Ron Johnson in our state continues to say that this is just a bunch of fellas letting off steam, and he would have been worried if it had been Black Lives Matter. If you look at that video, Ron Johnson said a lot of things that are flat out false, certainly on things like vaccine and ivermectin and vaccines causing HIV and all this, where he goaded and enabled a guy who was taking that position, saying things like, well, what you say may be right. Yeah, there's all of that. And it's also true that he said he doesn't trust the CIA and the FBI. He trusts Putin and his intelligence. That's all the case. However, if he, after this presentation, goes around saying, oh, well, this is just a bunch of fellas. Anybody, even somebody who is disposed to support him, has got to say, we don't want that in the Senate. In any event, anybody on that committee who is reluctant to refer Donald Trump for prosecution to Merrick Garland, after this presentation, I think that this was directed to them initially, and they're going to change their minds. And secondly, I think it was directed to Merrick Garland. If he sits there and says, yeah, I watched all this. Yeah, it was a little tough, but I don't think there was a felony committed by Donald Trump. I don't see how he can continue as attorney general, quite frankly. Something's got to be done about this. There's got to be a grand jury convened, and Trump, Giuliani, Don Trump Jr., Mo Brooks, the rest of them, they've got to be indicted. And what was fascinating was the revelation that I had not heard before, that Scott Perry, the Republican congressman from Pennsylvania, and other congressmen, they said, plural, they didn't name them, all called Trump after January 6th, begging for pardons, and he didn't give them to him. Let me give you an example of one of these characters, Lauren Boebert, of Rifle, Colorado. She has a district that encompasses Aspen. It encompasses Snowmass Village. It encompasses the resort at Missouri Heights. And a lot of these, you know, some of the wealthiest people in the country are out there. And they're not crazy, but many of them don't live there and vote there. They live and vote on the coast. So somehow she gets in. She admitted on tape, and this was a separate story from the broadcast last night. She admitted on tape that she live tweeted the locations of various House members during the insurrection itself, Nancy Pelosi and others, to the mob, and that would have enabled them to kill them. There's a Republican congresswoman from the West Coast named Jaime Herrera Butler. She's a Republican. And on this audio tape, she is saying, quote, is it true, Lauren, that you were live tweeting from the floor, our location, to the people on the outside as we were being attacked? On audio, Lauren Boebert says, yes, those tweets did go out. And this was something that was live and public information. It was broadcast live. And Representative Jaime Butler said, so don't ask us about security if you're telling the attackers where we are at, because Boebert had been to complain about security. Boebert was in contact with the Stop the Steal organizers days before the insurrection. She also gave a late night Capitol tour 3 weeks ahead of January 6th in violation of Capitol procedures. The members of the mob were not the only people who attacked our Constitution and our Capitol. The Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys were not the only people who attacked our Constitution and our Capitol. Republican members of Congress attacked our Constitution and our Capitol. Republican members of Congress. And I'm not just talking about when the vote came up whether to certify that Joe Biden won the election, and about, I think it was something along the lines of two-thirds of the Republicans, about 140, 50 of them, voted against certifying Joe Biden and voted to certify Donald Trump. Yes, that attacked our Constitution and our Capitol, too. But the ones that were calling for pardons did more than that. Scott Perry met in the White House before the insurrection and was plotting the coup. Gymnasium Jim GYM Jordan met in the White House with Trump and was plotting the coup. And by the way, if the Republicans take over the House, Gymnasium Jim GYM Jordan of Ohio will be the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. He will be the one that can make or break any judicial appointment, including Supreme Court and Court of Appeals in the country. He will be the one that will pass on many of the issues that he conspired in the White House to overturn. Think about that. And the subset of people who ask for pardons are the ones in the Republican caucus, over and above voting fraudulently to install a guy who lost the election. Over and above that, over and above that. They didn't ask for pardons for that. You only ask for pardon if you think that you can be accused and are in risk of being found to have committed a felony. A felony. And that's what happened here. Trump didn't give any of them pardons. He didn't even give Giuliani pardons, but he gave them to Paul Manafort, Mike Flynn. He gave them to Steve Bannon, Roger Stone. The operatives, the plumbers, he did not give them to his co-conspirators. And I think it may have been because he was afraid that once they got them, they'd rat on him. They would turn like dogs on him. Whereas if he doesn't give it to them, they can still try to turn like dogs. But his lawyers can say, well, they're doing it to save their own worthless skins. This is what's going on in the Republican Party. Going to a break. Lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, on the insurrection and in the data, testimony, and documents that have been compiled by this commission, there are two people on a wall of shame in particular in the Congress and one cabinet member who stood tall, and I'm amazed at when I tell you who it was. But let me tell you about the real bad ones. Start with Kevin McCarthy. He is on tape, after the January 6th insurrection, saying, quote, "We just cannot sweep this under the rug. We need to know why it happened, who did it, and people need to be held accountable. And I'm committed to make sure that happens." He said this on the floor of the House right after the insurrection. Let me say it again. Kevin McCarthy, minority leader, quote, "We just cannot sweep this under the rug. We need to know why it happened, who did it, and people need to be held accountable, and I'm committed to make sure that happens." Another one on the wall of shame is a congresswoman from Arizona named Debbie Lesko. She asked for security on January 5th, the day before January 6th. She knew what was going to happen. And she said, quote, "We have Trump supporters who actually believe we are going to overturn the election. And when that doesn't happen, they are going to go nuts." She knew it the day before she said that. The day before, this Republican congresswoman from Arizona said that. She said, quote, "We have Trump supporters who actually believe we are going to overturn the election. And when that does not happen, they are going to go nuts." Well, what about Kevin McCarthy and Debbie Lesko? Kevin McCarthy now was asked in a press conference yesterday, "Do you believe the election was rigged? Do you believe that Joe Biden is not the legitimate president?" And he said, "Biden's in the White House." They said, "Yeah, that's not the issue." And he said, McCarthy goes, "You know, you keep asking me this stuff, politicizing it," and he walks away from it. And he is going around the country raising money saying the election was rigged. After he said on the House floor, quote, "We just cannot sweep this under the rug. We need to know why it happened, who did it, and people need to be held accountable, and I'm committed to make sure that happens," end quote, right after the insurrection. And then he's attacked the commission now itself. And he was asked to put Republicans on it. He put Gymnasium Jim GYM Jordan, who was in the White House right after Christmas planning it. And Debbie Lesko is an example. of one of the two-thirds of the House caucus who would not agree even today that Biden is the president, the legitimately elected president, said, quote, we have Trump supporters who actually believe we are going to overturn the election, and when that doesn't happen, they're going to go nuts. She said it the day before January 6th, asking for security. Okay, is there anybody, though, on the Republican team who showed some kind of character and some kind of guts? And believe it or not, the education secretary of the cabinet, Betsy DeVos, is that person. Now, Betsy DeVos did a lot of things, said a lot of things, inaugurated educational policies you don't agree with. I'm not getting into any of that. When push came to shove, what happened? She went to Mike Pence and she said, we've got to invoke the 25th Amendment, get Trump out of there, and you would then become the president. We've got to do this after January 6th. And that was discussed with other cabinet members. And then when Mike Pence chickened out, said, no, I'm not going to do that, she resigned. Betsy DeVos stood tall. Kevin McCarthy did not. Lesko of Arizona did not. And two-thirds of their caucus did not. What is the 25th Amendment? We've talked about it a little bit in the past. But it is an amendment to the Constitution. And I think it was sparked in part around the time of the Kennedy assassination. There's nothing in the Constitution that says what happens if the president is disabled but not dead. The reason for that is the Constitution says that if the president dies in office, and that has happened, McKinley was assassinated and Teddy Roosevelt, for instance, became president. If that happens, John F. Kennedy was assassinated and Lyndon Johnson became president, the vice president gets it. And the vice president is assassinated, believe it or not, the Speaker of the House gets it. And so on, president of the Senate. And then you start getting through the cabinet members, starting with state and ending up, I think, with agriculture. And then you get to the House by seniority if something terrible happens. Some bright person went, well, you know, okay, but what if the president has a stroke and he's lying there, he's unconscious, and can't function, can't communicate? What happens if he disappears? What happens if he goes crazy? Ronald Reagan, he had Alzheimer's, and towards the end it started to show. In the last year or two of his presidency, he had cabinet members making decisions for him. Warren Harding, when he took over, there was some question about his competence, and believe it or not, his wife, she didn't become president, but she called the shots. But the 25th Amendment basically says that if a majority of the cabinet votes to remove the president, they can, and the vice president becomes president. And here's the theory behind it. People pick their cabinet members, the presidents do, based on their ability, you know, their loyalty to the president. It's not like 25, or that all these people whom the president just picked and who presumably are loyal to the president get together and say, oh, well, let's get rid of him, put in the vice president. They only should do it, and they only would do it if he went unconscious, a stroke, or crazy. And what Betsy DeVos was saying, she wasn't the only one, you know. Early on, there was talk with Trump right at the get-go of doing it. And Pence was part of those discussions. Remember that back in 2017? Pence was part of it. One of the chiefs of staff and several other secretary of state were part of it. But it fizzled out. And that would have been extraordinary. Remove the guy who just appointed you 6 months into his term, because he's clearly a traitor controlled by Russia. He's clearly crazy, and he's hurting the country. But this was different. This is the January 6th insurrection. And he was only going to be president for 14 more days, till January 20. They were very afraid he'd do something. you know, launch a nuclear weapon, start a war, declare martial law, and suspend the transfer of power, and use the military, remove Milley and put somebody else in. They didn't know. They should have convened the cabinet. They should have removed him. But my point is this. Betsy DeVos said, I resign. When she saw what Trump did, ginning up that attack, five people died. Officer Sicknick committed suicide. Officer Edwards was beaten, head smashed into the concrete, bike rack, pepper sprayed, tear gassed. Another officer thrown on the ground and almost kicked to death until he said he had four children. Another officer, you saw the picture, had his head jammed in a door and they were crushing his head and he was screaming and he had blood in his mouth. Carolyn Edwards, Officer Edwards, said that she slipped at one point on the blood from other officers right next door. Betsy DeVos saw this, saw what Trump said. And this is even before it came out that when he watched it and heard them say, hang Mike Pence, he chuckled and said, maybe Pence deserves that. Even before she knew that, she called Pence. And she said, we've got to invoke the 25th Amendment. I'm calling you because you're the one that convenes the cabinet and you would become president. And Pence chickened out. And Trump was being urged to declare martial law under an act that goes back to the early 1800s and was only invoked by a president like Ulysses Grant, who, when he became president, after Abraham Lincoln was assassinated and after Andrew Johnson's term ran out in 1868, the entire Confederate Army was raging through the South, murdering black people and reinstituting basically the same structure they had before the Civil War. And you know what Ulysses Grant did? He was a great president. He invoked martial law and he went down there and he put it down. There was combat. People were killed. People were put in jail. And you had Reconstruction with him. But in 1876, it was when Rutherford Hayes and Sam Tilden ran. Rutherford Hayes was a Republican, lost the race. But they didn't want to turn it over to a Democrat. The Democrats have been the party they thought of the South. They made a devil's bargain. They overturned everything that Grant had done and Lincoln had done. They got rid of Reconstruction so that the South would not contest that election. And for 100 years, almost 100 years, so John F. Kennedy, and some good action by Dwight Eisenhower towards the end of his term, you had rampant murder in the South. You had lynchings and you had Jim Crow. Betsy DeVos stood tall. I never thought I would say that. She stood tall. I'll tell you what, Kevin McCarthy did not stand tall. Debbie Lesko did not stand tall. What to do with all this? There has got to be a referral based on just what I saw last night. And everything that we know and everything we've read and all of the facts, there was a coup. They call it the Green Bay sweep. They defiled our team. There was a coup attempt, and it included violence, and it included a very sneaky plan to invoke martial law and have the Justice Department falsely claim there'd been fraud in the election. That cannot stand unredressed. Going to break. Lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Matt Flynn, director. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, sadly, I want to go back to Uvalde, Texas, the school district. And there's more and more revelations coming out about how the police, the school police chief in particular, simply ran away. and sacrifice kids. There was still something like 11 kids alive and three teachers in that room. And they could hear the police retreating down the hall. The Uvalde school police chief is in deep trouble. In Parkland, the security officer hid from the shooter and he has been criminally charged. It is a criminal offense to fail to discharge your official duties, and mostly that's not prosecuted. But when somebody deserts his post, unless 19 children and two teachers die, when there were 11 still alive and three teachers still there, one of them was shot twice and lived, the other two were killed. That's a different story. So the Uvalde police chief is now making up excuses, and here are some of them, and it's beyond belief, really. One came from his lawyer, but they basically come from him. First of all, he says, quote, "I deliberately left my radio behind to help my shooting accuracy." Well, let me tell you something. Okay. The radio is your communication. When the 9/11 calls came in from those little ones, you would have known because they would have radioed them to you. Nobody was asking you to shoot anybody. They were asking you to send your men in. That's what they were asking you to do. You know, the general doesn't go, "Here, let me go up to the front lines right now and fire the first shot." Some generals are involved in combat and some die. But he was the head guy. No one cares about his shooting accuracy. And if he's saying he can't shoot right because he has what? A radio on what? His belt? And his hand is a gun? Give me a break, okay? Second, he said, "I tried to get into the room. I tried at least 26 keys. None of them worked. And it was a key ring that weighed 10 pounds. Now, let me tell you something. A gallon of milk weighs 8 pounds. All right? Gallon of milk weighs 8 pounds. Pick up a gallon of milk. Then add 2 pounds to it, a quarter of it. That's basically another quart, almost a half gallon, onto that. And stick it on the janitor's belt. His pants are going to be down by his ankles. I mean, give me a break. Pick up 10 pounds of sugar. Do you ever pick up 10 pounds of sugar? 10 pounds of potatoes? Do you ever pick up a gallon of milk? Gallon of milk isn't even 8 pounds. It is 8 pounds, not 10 pounds. You put that on your belt, your pants are at your ankles. So I don't believe it was 10 pounds, to be very, very honest with you. And why did 26 keys weigh 10 pounds? I mean, 26 keys don't weigh your car keys and your house and all that. You might have 3, 4, 5 keys. Does that weigh 2 pounds or something? No, it doesn't weigh 2 pounds. Then he goes, "Well, we did our best. We did our best." That guy was in there with live students for about an hour, and they didn't do anything. "We were waiting for backup." Oh, you are. You were waiting for what? Backup? How many guys did you have there? Why did you handcuff and throw on the ground fathers who wanted to break in to rescue their daughters? Some of them had brought their own guns. Why did you do that? Why didn't you let them at least try it if you weren't able to? "We had to secure the crime scene." But, you know, 11 of them hadn't been killed yet. And three teachers hadn't been shot at and two killed. So there had been a crime scene leading up till then, but the idea was to save the little ones. The idea was to save the little ones. And if you're not willing to do it, let the fathers do it. Wouldn't do it. Couldn't get in the door. He said, finally, another officer found the key. Really, he found the key? Where'd he find the key? Where the heck did he find the key? Well, was it on a hook in the janitor's office? You didn't look? Why didn't you break the door down? Well, we were waiting for a battering ram. Oh, you're waiting for a battering ram. Why didn't you shoot through the door? You can shoot through the door. He's on the other side. Bring him up to negotiate with him and then shoot him through the door. Shoot low so that you don't hit a kid. This is absolutely disgusting, absurd. And this is an example why criminal defendants usually are told by good lawyers, don't say anything. The minute you say anything, they realize you're lying and they realize how ridiculous it is. To say that he deliberately left his radio home to help his shooting accuracy, and then he didn't shoot, and then he couldn't get 9/11 calls. And then he says he tried 26 keys on a key ring that weighed 10 pounds is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And he waited over an hour for backup, basically for people with the guts to go in instead of him, is what it was. And the people in there heard them retreat. Well, there's a lot of things that have to be done about Uvalde. One of them has to be you get rid of everybody there who did not go in, and you have the police chief in front of a grand jury. Message has to be sent. The second thing is AR-15s, and I'll say this on Blue in the Face, AR-15s are military weapons. You have a magazine 30 rounds, that's a military weapon. The intent there is to kill people. People like Cruz and the rest, so you need it for killing some animals. Oh, really, what animals? What animals do you require 30 rounds from a semi-automatic like an AR-15? And then they say, well, you know, 18-year-olds have rights. Yeah, 18-year-olds have rights and they have responsibilities. Some states are not allowed to drink. They used to be not able to vote till they were 21 until a constitutional amendment passed in 1972. They can be drafted into the Army or armed services. That's how they show responsibility. With rights come responsibilities. An 18-year-old does not have the maturity, does not have the sense of responsibility to buy an AR-15 with magazines holding 30 rounds. You can buy several of them on his 18th birthday. Or the day after. And that's what happened in Buffalo, and that's what's happened in Uvalde. Mitt Romney just came out for raising the age to 21. The bill that's going through the Senate right now, the bill in the House is great. I mean, the bill in the House raised it to 21 for semi-automatics like that. I don't think that's enough. Apparently, they didn't have the votes for more. It simply has to be classified as a military weapon, along with nuclear weapons, chemical weapons, biological weapons, stingers, javelins, shoulder-held missiles, bazookas, machine guns, then put semi-automatics with high and high-capacity magazines, like AR-15s. That's all. Suddenly, you can't have them, and if you do have them, have a buyback, and if you don't buy it back, impose a tax on it. And then if you don't pay that tax, you've committed tax fraud. And then the second thing on that, permit gun manufacturers and gun stores to be sued if they sell it to a murderer. They'll get insurance, and the insurance companies will do the real work. They'll say, here's what you're going to do, guy. You're not going to sell to 18-year-olds, or we are not going to insure you. Something's got to be done. But this clown in Uvalde, enough's enough listening to this stuff. Go to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.